Good morning. It's Thursday, December 18th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, the story behind a unique new statue in the Capitol, how the president is trying to free a MAGA loyalist, and the next person in charge of our missions to space is confirmed. But first, last night, President Trump gave a primetime address to the nation, focused mostly on the state of the economy. During the speech, he attacked Democrats, blaming them for increased prices across the board and other issues, while giving himself credit for solving those problems.
Here at home, we're bringing our economy back from the brink of ruin. The last administration and their allies in Congress looted our treasury for trillions of dollars, driving up prices and everything at levels never seen before. I am bringing those high prices down and bringing them down very fast.
The president also said that in just under a year, he brought the country back from the brink.
1 year ago, our country was dead. We were absolutely dead. Our country was ready to fail, totally failed. Now, we're the hottest country anywhere in the world.
The combative speech comes at a moment when Trump has struggled to assuage concerns among voters that the general cost of living in the United States is still stubbornly high. What has been a political strength of Trump's, one that he used to help win his second term in the White House, is now his own cross to bear in a sense. Despite the president's claims during his address that prices for things like plane tickets, gas, and groceries are all falling on his watch, the public at large hasn't really agreed with that.
The main promise he made was to lower consumer costs on day one. And now he's really painted himself into a corner because there actually isn't very much the president can do to lower consumer costs by himself.
Jacob Bogage is the White House economic correspondent for The Washington Post. A new poll from PBS News, NPR, and Marist found that 36% of Americans approve of Trump's handling of the economy. That marks the lowest in their polling on the issue across his 2 terms in office. A recent AP poll found similar levels of dissatisfaction. And economic data does show that prices have edged up for much of Trump's first year back at the White House. Recently, the administration has taken some actions to ease cost of living concerns, including rolling back some tariffs on grocery goods like Brazilian coffee and beef, a plan to cut the price of weight loss drugs, and rolling back fuel efficiency rules to make cars more affordable. And just last night, Trump announced a plan to send checks to members of the U.S. military. Meanwhile, the White House is also actively trying to message to voters that they're working on the affordability crisis. Just this week, Vice President J.D. Vance made a stop in Pennsylvania, a key battleground state, bearing that message. Bogage told us that while Republicans close to Trump believe he has delivered on eliminating regulatory red tape in addition to tax hikes and cuts, Americans are just still unhappy with how things are going.
They feel the economy legitimately is on pretty steady footing, that consumers have the resources to keep up with prices, that their wages are rising to keep up with prices, and that they are all in all on pretty good footing, and yet they're not getting credit for it.
On the employment front, figures released this week showed the U.S. added 64,000 jobs in November, but lost 105,000 in October. Those job losses include thousands of federal workers who accepted delayed resignations. The unemployment rate also ticked up to 4.6%, the highest since 2021.
The frustrating thing for the president and for the Republican Party, and I don't know how they wiggle their way out of this, is they ran for office by promising these instant economic results and conditioning voters to believe that they were achievable. Now that they can't achieve them because they promised some impossible results, how do you put the genie back in the bottle there? You can't do it.
President Trump has embraced the power of pardons in his second term, granting clemency to more than 1,700 people. But there's one MAGA loyalist that Trump wants to free, but can't. Tina Peters was a Colorado County clerk convicted last year for tampering with voting equipment under her control after the 2020 election. Handing down the sentence, the judge didn't hold back in his assessment of Peters' character.
You are no hero, you abused your position, and you're a charlatan who used and is still using your prior position in office to peddle a snake oil that's been proven to be junk time and time again.
Prosecutors said that she had become fixated on false claims of voter fraud spread by Trump after his defeat.
And that sort of set her off on this odyssey to try to prove that the machines, the voting equipment that were under her control in the 2020 election were somehow rigged and that votes could be changed.
Yvonne Winget Sanchez is a reporter with The Atlantic and profiled her case.
In doing so, she ended up in quite a bit of hot water. Local authorities said that she deceived her own colleagues and allowed a person to gain unauthorized access to the machines. And in the end, she was convicted of breaking the law and she was sent to prison.
She was sentenced to 9 years, but Peters maintained her innocence throughout and in court showed no remorse.
The people that have spoken here today asking for harsh sentences, I'm just appalled. I feel bad for them because I know I've often said God doesn't like people messing with his kids. I believe I'm a child of God, and I believe that it was important for someone to stand up, and I chose to do that.
Trump characterizes Peters as a political prisoner, but these are state charges, not federal, so he lacks the power to release her. Instead, Trump has been pushing for the Democratic governor, Jared Polis, to enact the pardon, saying this on Monday.
The poorly run state of Colorado with a governor who's incompetent, and frankly, with a governor that won't allow our wonderful Tina to come out of a jail.
Sanchez said it's going beyond just criticizing Governor Polis.
And so in the absence of any action to get her out, to break her out of state prison, the president has directed the Department of Justice to do anything that they can do to try to get her out. And that has happened. It's all been unsuccessful.
Polis posted on social media that Peters was convicted by a jury of her peers and that the president doesn't have jurisdiction in the matter. Sanchez reports that the White House's top lawyer spoke to the county's Republican district attorney about the case, and he denied a Federal Bureau of Prisons request to hand Peters over to their custody. This week, Trump posted on social media that he had granted a full pardon to Peters, despite lacking the authority to do so. She remains in prison. And Sanchez says that Trump's position is far from universal.
I talked to a lot of Republicans even who feel like, you know, as one person told me, you do the crime, you do the time. And she did the crime. And she's not just undermining elections here in our county, but she's really testing the state and county's legal authority to enforce our own laws. A jury of our peers in a heavily Republican area decided that she was guilty of 7 counts and that she should go to prison.
Peters is appealing the sentence, and her lawyers have cited Trump's pardon push in their efforts to free her. Let's talk about a story now out of Washington that flew under the radar this week, about a historic figure you might not be very familiar with, and a statue that honors her story. Barbara Rose Johns, then a 16-year-old Black teenager, led a protest in the early 1950s that contributed to profound changes in the country. On Tuesday, House Speaker Mike Johnson and Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries gathered in Emancipation Hall in the Capitol to unveil her new statue.
Today, we are here to honor one of America's true trailblazers, a woman who embodied the essence of the American spirit in her fight for liberty and justice and equal treatment under the law, the indomitable Barbara Rose Johns. Thank you all for being part of this.
The Commonwealth of Virginia will now be properly represented by an actual patriot who embodied the principle of liberty and justice for all.
And what she's best known for is leading a walkout at her Virginia high school to protest the conditions there and advocate for more equal facilities compared to the white high school. And that case pretty directly led to Brown v. Board of Ed, which ended school segregation in the U.S.
That's Rachel Treisman, a reporter who covered the unveiling for NPR. Now, the hall is unique because every state legislature gets to select 2 notable people from its history to be represented there. Virginia has George Washington, and for more than a century, it had Confederate General Robert E. Lee. But back in 2020, Ralph Northam, the former Democratic governor of Virginia, requested that Lee's statue be removed, and a state commission selected Barbara Rose Johns in his place. Treisman told us a bit about Barbara's life story. She was born in New York, but went to school in Farmville, Virginia, where she started to notice how inferior her school was compared to the one for white kids.
Classrooms were in these freestanding tar paper shacks. They didn't have plumbing or heat. And of course, they didn't have facilities like science labs or a gym or an athletic field. And over the years, it seems like she grew increasingly frustrated. We know from some of her writings that she took her concerns to a teacher and the teacher basically said, "Why don't you do something about it?" And she got to thinking about it and decided to take it upon herself to try to change that.
And in 1951, she gathered all 450 students and organized a mass walkout. Her sister, Joan Johns Cobbs, was by her side that day. And in 2019, she spoke to The 74, an education news site.
"We all followed her out that day, even though most of us were shocked. In fact, I think all of us were shocked. I remember her saying that our parents had tried to get a new school, and they had failed, and that the only way that we were going to get a new school was for us to walk out of the school."
Their strike lasted 2 weeks, and it caught the attention of the NAACP. Their resulting fight for new schools reached the courts, and that had a big ripple effect.
So there was this case that resulted in the new school being built, but more importantly, that case became one of the five that the Supreme Court considered in 1952 and in the years following in Brown v. Board of Ed, which challenged segregated education nationwide.
The statue depicts Barbara Rose Johns as her teenage self in a rallying cry and holding a book in the air. She's joining Illinois' Francis Willard, California's Ronald Reagan, and Arkansas's Johnny Cash, among others. And Treisman said that the timing of the unveiling was notable as well.
"What I think is nationally relevant here, too, is we don't see a lot of Confederate statues being replaced in 2025, both because so many of them came down in 2020 and the years after, and also because now under the second Trump administration, there is sort of this push from the White House to reinstall some of those Confederate statues rather than replace them. And so I think this speaks to the fact that this change has been in the works for 5 years at this point, well before President Trump was reelected.
After the walkout, Barbara had safety concerns and moved to Alabama to finish her studies. She went to university and later returned to education as a librarian for Philadelphia Public Schools. She died in 1991 and left behind five children. Her old school is among a list of civil rights landmarks across the country that are being considered as a collective UNESCO World Heritage Site. And finally, a few other stories we're following. In what amounted to a pretty stunning revolt in the House of Representatives, four Republicans broke with House Speaker Mike Johnson's position on extending Affordable Care Act subsidies. As you heard on the show yesterday, Johnson forged ahead with a GOP bill that didn't address those subsidies. That bill passed easily in the House, but has little chance in the Senate. The dissenting Republicans, meanwhile, signed on to a Democratic-led discharge petition, which means there are now enough votes to bypass the Speaker and bring the issue to the House floor. A vote is set for early January. The subsidies, which are used by more than 20 million people, will expire at the end of the year, leading to healthcare premiums doubling on average for people who get their insurance through the ACA. In response to the defections, Johnson told reporters, quote, "I have not lost control of the House." He cited the party's slim majority as a reason the petition gained enough support. Yesterday, the Senate confirmed a new NASA administrator after a year-long back-and-forth drama over filling the role. Jared Isaacman, a billionaire entrepreneur and private astronaut, was first nominated before President Trump was inaugurated. His bid to lead the agency was pulled after Trump had a falling out with Elon Musk over the summer. Isaacman sailed through committee and was expected to be confirmed, but Trump stopped that. He cited Isaacman's previous donations to prominent Democrats and his close connections to Musk. Observers noted that installing Isaacman in the NASA job was a big coup for Musk, whose company SpaceX often wins lucrative contracts with the federal government. During his confirmation hearings, Democratic senators questioned whether there would be a conflict of interest if Isaacman, who flew two SpaceX missions, were to land the role of NASA administrator. He said there would not be and promised to resign from private sector posts if confirmed. And finally, the Oscar goes to YouTube. That's right. Beginning in 2029, the Oscars are going to stream exclusively on the platform, reaching more than 2 billion people across the world. It's been described as a watershed moment for the entertainment business, as ABC has been the home for the Oscars since 1976. And it comes at a tense moment for the industry, as debates continue over the future of streaming, movie theaters, and mergers. One screenwriter summed up his reaction to the move by saying, quote, YouTube broadcasting the Oscars is like shaking hands with the guy who's trying to kill you. But Variety writes that there could be some upsides. A show that might not be constrained by a 3-hour time slot, unfiltered hosts, and more. And maybe, just maybe, fewer people getting their speeches cut as the orchestra plays them off. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we have a narrated article coming up next. Esquire reports on how the sins of a televangelist power couple threaten to tear their empire and family apart. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.